This is a talk by Ajahn Chah, In the Shape of a Circle, and it's in the book by the same name, translated by Ajahn Tanisaro. I'm not sure that it appears in the collected teachings. And it's fairly long, so I'm going to keep reading. I might only get halfway through. We'll see. In the Shape of a Circle, a talk given to a visiting monk who is getting discouraged in his practice. When it comes to the Dhamma, we have to understand that our opinions are one thing, the Dhamma is something else. As for the practice, start out by establishing your powers of endurance, and then contemplate. Contemplate your activities, your comings and goings. Contemplate what you're up to. Whatever arises, the Buddha has us know all around. Whatever direction things come from, he has us know all around. If we know all around, whatever comes at us from this way, we see it. Whatever comes at us from that way, we see it. Right, we know. Wrong, we know. Happy, we know. Glad, we know. We know all around. But our minds, when they contemplate, aren't yet all around. We just know this side, but leave that side wide open. It's like putting a fence around a field or a house, but it doesn't go all around. If we put it up just on this side, thieves will come in on that side, the side that the fence hasn't gone around. Why is that? We haven't closed the gate. Our fence isn't yet good. It's normal that they'll have to come through that opening. So we contemplate again, adding more fence, closing things off continually. Putting up a fence means establishing mindfulness and always being alert. If we do this, the Dhamma won't go anywhere else. It'll come right here. Good and bad, the Dhamma we should see and should know, will arise right here. As for whatever we don't need to know, we let it go for the time being. We don't waste our time with the logs we aren't yet strong enough to lift. Wait until we have a tractor or a 10-wheel truck before trying to move them. Focus for the time being just on the things you can lift. Keep at it, using your powers of endurance, bit by bit. If you stick with this steadily, your happy moods and sad moods, your desirable moods and undesirable moods, will all come in right there. That's where you get to watch them. Your moods and preoccupations are one thing, the mind is something else. They're two different kinds of things. Usually when a mood hits, one that we like, we go running after it. If it's one we don't like, we turn our backs on it. When this is the case, we don't see our own mind. We just keep running after our moods. The mood is the mood, the mind is the mind. You have to separate them out to see what the mind is like, what the mood is like. As when we're sitting here still, we feel at ease. But if someone comes along and insults us, we go running after the mood. We've left our spot. The mind that gets deluded by the mood goes running after the mood. We become a moody person, a person who panders to his moods. You have to understand that all your moods are lies. There's nothing true to them at all. They're far from the Buddha's teaching. All they can do is lie to us about everything of every sort. The Buddha taught us to meditate to see their truth, the truth of the world. The world is our moods, our preoccupations. Our preoccupations are the world. If we aren't acquainted with the Dhamma, aren't acquainted with the mind, aren't acquainted with our preoccupations, we grab onto the mind and its preoccupations and get them all mixed up. Phew, my mind feels no ease. It's like you have many minds and they're all in a turmoil. Actually, that's not the case. You don't have many minds. You have many moods and preoccupations. We're not acquainted with our own mind, so we keep running after our preoccupations. If you sit meditating like that, things just keep running along in that way. The Buddha taught us to look at things right there, right where they arise. When they arise, they don't stay. They disband. They disband and then they arise. When they arise, they disband. But we don't want them to be that way. When the mind is quiet, we want to keep on We want it to keep on being quiet. We don't want it to get stirred up. We want to be at our ease. Our views are in opposition to the truth. The Buddha taught us first to see these things all around from all sides. Only then will the mind be really quiet and still. As long as we don't know these things, as long as we don't understand our moods, we become a moody person. We lay claim to our moods. This turns into stubbornness and pride. When we see this happening, the Buddha tells us to turn our attention to contemplating right there. This kind of thinking is thinking. This kind of knowing is knowing. When things are like this, they're like this. Tell yourself that these things simply follow their own nature. This is what moods are like. This is what the mind is like. When this is the way things are, what can you do to be at your ease? What can you do to be at your ease? Well, just contemplate right there. We don't want things to be like that. That's the reason for our discomfort. No matter where you go to run away from these things, they're still just like that. So we should understand that these things are just the way they are. That's all. That's the truth. To put it simply, that's the Buddha, but we don't see him there. We think it's Devadatta, not the Buddha, at all. The inconstancy of the Dhamma, inconstancy, stress, and not self, there's nothing wrong with these things. They're just the way they are. We place too many labels and intentions on them. When you can see that happening, it's really good. To put it in simple terms, suppose that when you sit in concentration today, the mind is still. You think to yourself, this is really nice. Just sitting there, you feel at ease. This keeps up for 2 or 3 days. I really like this. Then the next day when you sit down to meditate, it's like sitting on a red ant's nest. You can't stay seated. Nothing works. You're all upset. You ask yourself, why isn't it like the other day? Why was it so comfortable then? You can't stop thinking about the other day. You want it to be like the other day. Right there is where you're deluded. Preoccupations change. They're not constant or sure. They're not stable. They just keep following their nature. The Buddha taught us to see that that's the way they are. Whatever arises is just old stuff coming back. There's nothing to it, but we fix labels and make rules about things. This I like, this I don't like. Whatever we like makes us happy. Happy because of our delusion. Happy because of our delusion. Not happy because it's right. When the mind is quiet, the Buddha tells us not to be intoxicated by it. When it's distracted, he tells us not to be intoxicated by it. Things happen in all kinds of ways. There's addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. That's how we can calculate numbers. But we want there to be just multiplication so that we can have lots of everything. We want to do away with addition, do away with subtraction, do away with division, and our calculations will all be stupid. If we had nothing but multiplication, would we have any space to put everything? If that's how we think, we'll stay in a turmoil. The Buddha said that that sort of thinking has no discernment. Stillness of mind, tranquility, comes from being far away from preoccupations. If you don't hear much of anything, the mind settles down and is still. To get this kind of stillness, you have to go off into seclusion, to a place that's quiet and still. If you can get away from your preoccupations, not seeing this, not knowing about that, the mind can settle down. But that's like a disease like cancer. There's a swelling, but it doesn't yet hurt. It's not yet tormenting us. It doesn't hurt. So we seem to be well, as if there were no defilements in the mind. That's what the mind is like at times like that. As long as you stay there, it's quiet. But when it comes out to look at sights and hear sounds, that's the end of it. It's not at its ease anymore. How can you keep on staying alone like that so as not to see sights, hear sounds, smell aromas, taste flavors, or touch tactile sensations? Where can you go? There's no place in the world like that at all. The Buddha wanted us to see sights, hear sounds, smell aromas, taste flavors, or touch tactile sensations. Hot, cold, hard, soft. He wanted us to be acquainted with everything. He didn't want us to run away and hide. He wanted us to look, and when we've looked, to understand. Oh, that's the way these things are. He told us to give rise to discernment. How do we give rise to discernment? The Buddha said that it's not hard, if we keep at it. When distractions arise, oh, it's not for sure, it's unconstant. When the mind is still, don't say, oh, it's really nice and still. That, too, isn't for sure. If you don't believe me, give it a try. Suppose that you like a certain kind of food and you say, boy, do I really like this food. Try eating it every day. How many months could you keep it up? It won't be too long before you say, enough, I'm sick and tired of this. Understand? I'm really sick and tired of this. You're sick and tired of what you liked. We depend on change in order to live, so just acquaint yourself with the fact that it's all inconstant. Pleasure isn't for sure, pain isn't for sure, happiness isn't for sure, stillness isn't for sure, distraction isn't for sure. Whatever, it all isn't for sure. Whatever arises, you should tell it, don't try to fool me, you're not for sure. That way, everything loses its value. If you can think in that way, it's really good. The things you don't like are all not for sure. Everything that comes along isn't for sure. It's as if they were trying to sell you things, but everything has the same price. It's not for sure. Not for sure in any way at all. In other words, it's inconstant. It keeps moving back and forth. To put it simply, that's the Buddha. Inconstancy means that nothing's for sure. That's the truth. Why don't we see the truth? Because we haven't looked to see it clearly. Whoever sees the Dhamma sees the Buddha. If you see the inconstancy of each and everything, you give rise to nibbida, disenchantment. That's all this is, no big deal. That's all that is, no big deal. The concentration in the mind is, no big deal. When you can do that, it's no longer hard to contemplate. Whatever the preoccupation, you can say in your mind, no big deal, and it stops right there. Everything becomes empty and in vain. Everything that's unsteady and constant. It moves around and changes. It's inconstant, stressful, and not self. It's not for sure. It's like a piece of iron that's been heated until it's red and glowing. Does it have any spot where it's cool? Try touching it. If you touch it on top, it's hot. If you touch it underneath, it's hot. If you touch it on the sides, it's hot. Why is it hot? Because the whole thing is a piece of red-hot iron. Where could it have a cool spot? That's the way it is. When that's the way it is, we don't have to go touching it. We know it's hot. If you think that, this is good, I really like it, don't give it your seal of guarantee. It's a red-hot piece of iron. Wherever you touch it, wherever you hold onto it, it'll immediately burn you in every way. So keep on contemplating. Whether you're standing or walking or whatever, even when you're on the toilet or on your alms round, when you eat, don't make it a big deal. When the food comes out the other end, don't make it a big deal. Whatever it is, it's inconstant. It's not for sure. It's not truthful in any way. It's like touching a red-hot piece of iron. You don't know where you can touch it because it's hot all over. So you just stop touching it. This is inconstant. That's inconstant. Nothing at all is for sure. Even our thoughts are inconstant. Why are they inconstant? They're not self. They're not ours. They have to be the way they are. They're unstable and inconstant. Boil everything down to that. Whatever you like isn't for sure. No matter how much you like it, it isn't for sure. Whatever the preoccupation, no matter how much you like it, you have to tell yourself, this isn't for sure, this is unstable and inconstant, and keep on watching. Like this glass. It's really pretty. You want to put it away so that it doesn't break, but it's not for sure. One day, you put it right next to yourself, and then, when you reach for something, you hit it by mistake. It falls to the floor and breaks. It's not for sure. If it doesn't break today, it'll break tomorrow. If it doesn't break tomorrow, it will break the next day, for it's breakable. We're taught not to place our trust in things like this, because they're inconstant. Things that are inconstant, the Buddha taught that they're the truth. Think about it. If you see that there's no truth to things, that's the truth. That's constant, for sure. When there's birth, there has to be aging, illness, and death. That's something constant and for sure. What's constant comes from things that aren't constant. We say that things are inconstant and not for sure, and that turns everything around. That's what's constant and for sure. It doesn't change. How is it constant? It's constant in that that's the way things keep on being. Even if you try to get in the way, you don't have an effect. Things just keep on being that way. They arise and then they disband. Disband and then arise. That's the way it is with inconstancy. That's how it becomes the truth. The Buddha and his noble disciples awakened because of inconstant things. When you see inconstancy, the result is nibbida, disenchantment. Disenchantment isn't disgust, you know. If you feel disgust, that's wrong, the wrong kind of disenchantment. Disenchantment isn't like our normal disgust. For example, if you live with your wife and children to the point where you get sick and tired of them, that's not disenchantment. It's actually a big defilement. It squeezes your heart. If you run away from things like that, it's being sick and tired because of defilement. That's not nibbida. It's actually a heavy defilement, but we think it's disenchantment. Suppose that you're kind to people. Whatever you have, you want to give to them. You sympathize with them. You see that they're pretty and lovely and good to you. Your defilements are now coming around the other side. Watch out. That's not kindness through the Dhamma. It's selfish kindness. You want something out of them, which is why you're kind to them. It's the same with disenchantment. I'm sick and tired of this. I'm not going to stay any longer. I'm fed up. That's not right at all. It's a big defilement. It's disenchantment only in name. The Buddha's disenchantment is something else. Leaving things alone, putting them down. You don't kill them. You don't beat them. You don't punish them. You're not nice to them. You just put them down. Everything. The same with everything. That's how it has to be. Only then can you say that your mind has let go, that it's empty. Empty of clinging, empty of attachment. Emptiness doesn't mean nobody exists. Or like this glass. It's not the case that it has to not exist for us to say that it's empty. This thermos exists. People exist. Everything exists. But those who know feel in their hearts that these things are truths. They're not for sure. They simply follow their conditions. They're tamas that arise and disband. That's all. Take this thermos. If we like it, it doesn't react or say anything. The liking is all on our side. Even if we hate it and throw it into the woods, it still doesn't react. It doesn't respond to us. Why? Because it's just the way it is. We like it or dislike it because of our own attachment. We see that it's good or no good. The view that it's good squeezes our heart. The view that it's no good squeezes our heart. Both are defilements. So you don't have to run away from things like this. Just understand this principle and keep contemplating. That's all there is to it. The mind will see these things are no big deal. They're just the way they are. If we hate them, they don't respond. If we like them, they don't respond. We're simply crazy of our own accord. Nothing disturbs us, but we get all worked up. Try to see everything in this way. It's the same with the body. It's the same with the mind. It's the same with the moods and preoccupations that make contact. See them as inconstant, stressful, and not self. They're just the way they are. We suffer because we don't want them to be that way. We want to get things we simply can't get. Is there something you want? I guess it's like when I want concentration. I want the mind to be quiet. Okay, it's true that you want that. But what's the cause that keeps your mind from being quiet? The Buddha says that all things arise from causes, but we just want the results. We eat watermelons, but we've never planted any watermelons. We don't know where they come from. We see when they're sliced open and they're nice and red, looks sweet. We try eating them and they taste good and sweet, but that's all we know. Why watermelons are that way? Why watermelons are the way they are? We have no idea. That's because we aren't all around. All around in what way? It's like watering vegetables. Wherever we forget to water doesn't grow. Wherever we forget to give fertilizer doesn't grow. Contemplate this principle and you'll give rise to discernment. When you've finished with things outside, you look at your own mind. Look at the affairs of your body and mind. Now that we're born, why do we suffer? We suffer from the same old things, but we haven't thought them through. We don't know them thoroughly. We suffer, but we don't really see suffering. When we live at home, we suffer from our wife and children, but no matter how much we suffer, we don't really see suffering, so we keep on suffering. It's the same when the mind doesn't get concentrated. We don't know why it won't get concentrated. We don't really see what's actually arising. The Buddha told us to look for the causes of what's arising. All things arise from causes. It's like putting water in a bottle and giving it to someone to drink. Once he's finished drinking it, he'll have to come back and ask for more. For the water isn't water in a spring, it's water in a bottle. But if you show the spring to the person and tell him to get water there, he can sit there and keep on drinking water and won't ask you for any more, for the water never runs out. It's the same when we see inconstancy, stress, and not self. It goes deep, for we really know. We know all the way in. Ordinary knowledge doesn't know all the way in. If we know all the way in, it never grows stale. Whatever arises, it's already right. When it disbands, it's already right. As a result, it's right without stop. The view that says, that's the way it is, it's right the way it is, that's when you've got it. That's when you're skilled and at ease. You don't have to suffer. The problems that we get involved with and cling to will gradually unravel. As the Buddha said, see simply that things arise and then disband, disband and then arise and then disband. Keep watching this Dhamma constantly, doing it constantly, developing it constantly, cultivating it constantly, and you'll arrive at a sense of disenchantment. Disenchanted with what? Disenchanted with everything of every sort. The things that come by the way of the ears, we already understand them. By way of the eyes, we already understand them. By way of the nose, we already understand them. By way of the tongue, we already understand them. The things that arise at the mind, we already understand them. They're all the same sort of thing. All of them, the same sort of thing. Eko Dhammo, one Dhamma. This Dhamma is inconstant, stressful, and not self. You shouldn't cling to anything at all. That way, disenchantment will arise. When the eye sees a form, you already understand it. When the ear hears a sound, you already understand it. You understand all about it. These things will sometimes make us happy, sometimes sad, sometimes make us feel love, sometimes make us feel hatred. We already know all about these sorts of things. If we cling to them, they turn into issues. If we let them go, let forms go the way of forms, sounds the way of sounds, if we send them back and let them go their own way, when we can stay at this level, the Buddha said that we'll see all about inconstancy. Whatever the preoccupations that arise, they're all empty and in vain. They're all deceptions. When we see through the things that used to deceive us, when we're intent on staying at ease, mindful, alert, and discerning, it's not that we see anything else. We simply see that all the preoccupations that arise are simply the way they are. Even if, while we're sitting perfectly still, the mind thinks about this or that, it doesn't matter. It's just an affair of thinking. You don't have to believe what it's thinking about. If the mind is peaceful and you feel, it's nice and peaceful, the peace doesn't matter either. Peace is inconstant too. There's nothing but things that are inconstant. You can sit and watch the Dhamma right there. Discernment arises. What reason is there to suffer? We suffer over things that never amount to much. We want to get this, we want it to be like that. We want to be something. If you want to be an arahant, you immediately suffer, right here and now. Arahants have stopped wanting to be like this or like that, but we want to get this and get that, to be this and be that, so we're sure to suffer. If you see that this spot is good or that spot is excellent, it all comes out of you. If you see yourself, that's the end of saying things like that. I'll give you a simple comparison. This food is good. This tray is worth this many hundreds, that tray many tens. They're all nothing but good things. When they're on plates, this is mine, this is yours. But when they've gone into the stomach and come out the other end, nobody argues over whose is whose. Or would you still want to argue? That's what it's like. When you're willing to admit the way things are, that's just what it's like. If we don't really understand, we argue over what's mine and what's yours. But when they all come together as the same sort of thing, nobody lays any claims. They're simply the condition they are. No matter how wonderful the food might be, when it comes out the other end, if you wanted to give it as a gift to your brothers and sisters, no one would want it. Or would you still want it? Nobody would fight over it at all. For this reason, if we gather things together as Ekko Dhammo, one single Dhamma, and see that their characteristics are the same, it gives rise to disenchantment. This disenchantment isn't disgust. The mind simply loosens its grip, it's had enough, it's empty, it's sobered up. There's no love, no hatred, no fixating on anything. If you have things, okay. If you don't, it's still okay. You're at ease, at peace. Nibbanang paramang sukhang, Nibbanang paramang sunyang. Nibbana is the ultimate happiness. Nibbana is the ultimate peace, emptiness. Listen carefully. Worldly happiness isn't the ultimate happiness. Worldly emptiness isn't the ultimate emptiness. The ultimate emptiness is empty of clinging. The ultimate happiness is peace. There's peace, and then there's emptiness, the ultimate emptiness. At the moment, though, the mind is at peace, but it's not ultimate. It's happy, but it's not ultimate. Let's see, shall I keep going?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's enough to work on.
In the reading, Bhartchasa that nibbida, disenchantment, and then arising and ceasing, those understandings of insight, they come naturally through the contemplation of dukkha anatta. So, and you were saying that is sort of the measure the other day. You were saying that is the measure of insight when you see cessation, you have nibbida. That's because other than that, it's concentration before that. And I'm just wondering, when you have an object and then you turn to contemplate it in this way, dukkha-nicca-anatta, but it's not, that doesn't come up. Does that mean more so like you need to stabilize your mind more to see clearly, like your object? And, it's sort of.
Depends on how much self is involved. Because mm-hmm. you can say, oh, I've got to stabilize my mind and just be oozing self. Mm-hmm. So that's just going to create more suffering. Or I've got to make it like this, I've got to get it like that. And I've got to get this insight like this. But it's just, it's kind of rife with the sense of self. Whereas what one is trying, what you're turning your attention in the direction of the way things are, in order to step out of that whole I making and mind making. So this is the way things are. And when we can see that more clearly, then there's a releasing of that sense of both the desire and attachment and the creating of identification around it. And that's what you're using, both the settling and stabilizing of the mind, as well as the reflecting and the investigating.
So not to kind
of, it has a common purpose.
Not to think that it's not working. You're trying, you're figuring out, you're understanding what does the mind need right now. It's mm-hmm. not necessarily a conclusion like, okay, this isn't working, I'm not getting insight. It's that reflection on itself.
As long as there's this sense of me wrapped in there, then it's never going to work. It's just, it isn't the way the Dhamma. That's why one of the Atipatriya, what is prominent or what is prominent, what is dominating, and that's sort of the Lokatipataya. Lokatipataya, so that when the world is dominant, then of course we need to call Atatipataya, and both of those lead to suffering. But Dhammatipataya is when you're bringing up the Dhamma, bringing up truth, bringing up the way things are, that's what needs to be sort of the dominant theme or the dominant quality. So that whether we're keeping precepts or reflecting, investigating on a phenomena or settling the mind, it's not motivated through anything other than